We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Tuesday to you. And it is a Tuesday, 4th of June edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ready for you on 1037 The Game. I'm Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D for the next 2 hours. Plenty on LSU baseball, your inside look, a scouting report to Florida State baseball, and then everything that you want with LSU football recruiting, including a local prospect from right here in the Acadiana area who got a very impressive Alabama football offer. And oh, by the way, he's only a sophomore in waiting. And with that, we bring you in today for the next 2 hours inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We'll begin with LSU baseball on a couple of different fronts. You want to weigh in, we've got the time. 706-0111. First, we know the schedule. And maybe, just maybe, the bad weather expected in South Louisiana for Friday factored into LSU and Florida State being scheduled for Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. In case you haven't heard the news, Saturday, 2 p.m., first pitch from the box. It'll be on the mothership. On Sunday, 5 p.m. Central Time, first pitch on the Deuce. And if necessary, long after this show has ended, Monday night around 7:30 p.m., a game 3. That would also be on the mothership. I'm not sure that this is an advantage or disadvantage really for anybody. You might be able to find your way into talking it into being an advantage for Florida State. They traveled to Athens, Georgia last weekend. They got back home to Seminole Country in Tallahassee. Now maybe they have an extra day before jaunting over to Baton Rouge. And still, no definition to LSU's pitching rotation for this all-important Super Regional. But what we do know is that the SEC, incredibly well represented in the remaining 16 teams. In fact, when you look at it, 6 hail from the SEC. Arkansas, Ole Miss are playing one another in Fayetteville. LSU obviously taking on Florida State. Mississippi State will welcome in Stanford and Auburn, one of the worst teams from the SEC, at least to get into the field of 64. The Tigers / War Eagle / Plainsmen will be at North Carolina. So you've got 6 strong from the SEC that are represented. And, you know, for me, what I continue to wonder is, what's it going to take for LSU to get past Florida State? We'll learn a little more. We've got an inside look coming at 4:30. CD, I'll catch error number 1 of the program. Let's make that 5 SEC teams out of 16. There we go. Math is for us in South Louisiana. 5. No, I'm sorry. Here we go. This is the one I missed. Vandy, excuse me, the Commodores at home versus Duke. I knew I had 6 out of 16, so the more interesting note is when you look at the SEC West. And so look at the 6 that have made it this far. 5 hail from what would be the Western Division. The only 2 that didn't make it in, Texas A&M went 2-2, eventually bounced at the Morgantown Regional, and Alabama didn't make the field of 64. So we've got our math and our facts right. No fake news. 5 out of 6 SEC teams that are still left standing in the SEC West. The lone contender from the East is Vandy. And CD, if I'm reading this correctly, at this point you just want to advance, right? You just want to get to Omaha. But if LSU can do that, it looks like they'll be paired up and get an SEC showdown in game 1 against either Arkansas or Ole Miss. Either way, there's going to be a ton of familiarity if LSU joins the rank of 8 at the College World Series.
There will definitely be a lot of familiarity because, trust me, that thing is going to be loaded with SEC teams. I think that's as expected when you look at a lot of those teams that are going to be potentially in there. Arkansas getting a lot of experience, 1 foul ball away from being national champs last year. Ole Miss, we all know who – I think LSU knows Ole Miss better than Ole Miss knows themselves sometimes. the way that team works. It's definitely going to be fun.
More Drew bat flips on Mike Bianco.
That would be amazing.
Would be
honestly
tremendous.
Yes.
Brought to the CWS level. So plenty of SEC flavor into the final 16. Vandy with that logo tried to throw me off. Just camouflaged out there in that black and gold. But there are 6 out of 16. They are the lone representative from the East. Now let's slice it a different way. Last night, the first two rounds of the MLB draft came off the board. And today, we're still going in the midst of getting through round 10. I'll give you an update on the LSU players, current team members that have come off the board. That number is now 4 strong. Josh Smith was taken in the second round last night, 67th overall by the New York Yankees. Zach Watson, first pick of the third round earlier today, 79th overall. Watson going to the Baltimore Orioles, who also own the first overall pick. Zach Hess was taken in the seventh round by the Detroit Baseball Tigers, 202 overall. And moments before this show, Todd Peterson, fireballing reliever, was taken in the seventh round by the Washington Nationals, 11 picks after Zach Hess. You have to think that all 4 of those guys are gone. Watson, Hess came back last season when not everybody thought that would be the case. And so those two, for sure. Josh Smith, with the money that'll be due his way as a second-round pick, is gone. And I would think Todd Peterson loses any leverage by coming back. And so the 4 players, Smith, Watson, Hess, Peterson, that have all been snatched up, I think they stay professionals. As far as the LSU signees drafted to this point, Daniel Espino, first-rounder by the Cleveland Indians, 25th overall, wouldn't count on him sticking around. Rhys Hines, second-rounder by the Reds, 49th overall, ditto. Jimmy Lewis, second-rounder by the Dodgers, a compensatory pick at 78 overall. And Christian Cairo, MLB legacy, and a third-rounder going to the Indians. He was drafted 130th overall. And I think you would expect this, but the news so far, out of the 8 guys I just gave you, not a one of them, I think you should expect to remain or to make it to Baton Rouge. The draft slot, the money, it's just too good. But here's the stupendous news. Maurice Hampton, after not being taken in the first round, and this happened in real time on the Twitter machine last night, Maurice Hampton announced his intentions to stay with the program and also play football. I want to give a little credit here. John Martin of, I believe it's ESPN 92.9, CD, we'll get that right if incorrect. But John Martin had Maurice Hampton Sr. on the radio late this morning. And Hampton Sr. said, based on the research they did, it would have taken at least $2.75 million in terms of a signing bonus for his son to forego playing at LSU. The highest offer last night was a tad higher than $1.8 million. So somewhere in between was about $900,000, and that is the difference in LSU landing a starting outfielder right away as a freshman in 2020, and a guy that might just serve a fairly important, if not a very important role, on the LSU football team, playing in the secondary for Ed Ogeron and Corey Raymond. So tremendous news that Maurice Hampton is going to stick around. Mr. Football in the state of Tennessee, he's on a beeline to Baton Rouge. Now let me give you our guest list today, and both of these men will be able to speak to some of the points just made. At 4:30, your Florida State scouting report. Tim Linnefelt, senior writer, covering all things FSU for Seminoles.com. We've had him on the program before. We'll get him to talk about Mike Martin's men, plus some of the Noles that have been drafted already in the MLB draft. From 5 until 5:30, a double dose of our good friend Shea Dixon, go247.com. We'll get with Shea on Maurice Hampton, his projections of what he can do on the football field. We'll also get reaction to LSU's camp this past weekend. And I teased a local prospect at the top of this program that received an Alabama offer in football earlier today, despite being a sophomore in waiting. It is Walker Howard of St. Thomas More. I'll get Shea to give an early breakdown of the STM football players' recruitment. It's fascinating. Currently a backup, obviously, for the Cougars behind talented Caleb Holstein. But Walker Howard made some waves today. How does that affect what comes next for his recruitment? Plus, when we flip the script, how could Shea and I not go in on a man we covered up close and personal for quite some time. Les Miles going into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, FTS. Flip the Script today is all about the hat taking his turn at the podium and going into the hall in Natchitoches. Between now and 6, that's how we're going to line them up and knock them down. Stick with us. We'll be right back in. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're live on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Let's go, baby!
This is Acadiana's number one sports station. And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Get in on the conversation.
Call on the game hotline.
706-0111.
706-0111.
Plenty of news outside of the diamond today. Trust me, we'll get to that before our 2 hours are done. But for now, inspired by Mo Hampton, I've got a question for you. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game. Don't want to waste any time, CD. We know the news. I just gave it to you. As a reminder, Maurice Hampton, Mr. Football in the state of Tennessee, a state that's been pretty good to LSU lately, most notably Jacob Phillips at linebacker. I think we could certainly say Jacoby Stevens and what he's becoming as kind of a hybrid safety slash linebacker. But now there's an opportunity for Hampton to pay dividends, not only for Ed Ogeron, but also for Paul Maneri. That got me to thinking, which is always dangerous, but it did lead to a question.
Exciting and new.
More of a statement than a question today, but it works all the same. Give us your favorite college and pro dual sport athletes of all time. We'll leave it right there, let you take the baton and run with it. And the pun's intended, because I think especially on the collegiate level, there are a lot of guys that can still dabble in track and something else. The guys that do kind of two of the three major sports, football, basketball, and baseball. Well, that's a horse of a different color. Think on it. Give us a call. 706-0111. We've got some 7 or 8 minutes we can explore this before Tim Linnefelt comes on to talk Florida State baseball. But right now, we're hunting for your favorite college and pro dual sport athletes. CD, of course, you've got honors.
I think it's almost too easy to bring this one up right out the gate, Ben. And I think without a doubt, you can't not bring up Deion Primetime Sanders and what he was able to do as a two-sport athlete, both with the Atlanta Braves and the Atlanta Falcons, a couple Super Bowl titles, a World Series. He was appeared in the World Series. Pretty good career, to say the least, on both sides of the field.
I would say for many, the gold standards are Neon Deion and Bo Jackson, right? And to not throw Bo Jackson immediately into this conversation is, well, you're just mistaken and misguided. Now, if you go back far enough, somebody's going to make me toss in Jim Thorpe. They named an award after him for college football. Other than that, what most of us know is grainy black and white footage. So I'm going to give you a few more from the modern era. And the most underrated, at least in terms of LSU athletics, he played a little bit ahead of my time. But I'm familiar. After all, his footage wasn't in black and white. And that's Ben McDonald. If you've ever seen Ben McDonald play basketball, and I did when LSU in 2009 had its 100-year anniversary of the program, they brought back some of the best of all time, anybody who played and wanted to participate, and they had an exhibition game in the PMAC. Ben McDonald was giving buckets to human beings in 2009 in front of people in the PMAC, and I just want you to consider that. The basketball team, if I'm not mistaken, I've had to hear this story a few times over from my guy Ricky Blanton, Dale Brown, and others. But if I'm not mistaken, the basketball team caught chickenpox for a stretch in the mid to late 80s. And so you had to have athletes from other sports creep in. So maybe Ben McDonald, I think a guy like Chris Carrier as well, who played in the secondary of the football team, maybe they were forced into action. But let me assure you, Ben McDonald is a superior athlete and a whole lot more than just being a flame-throwing baseball player. I'm going to submit him as one of the most underrated of all time. I'm trying not to gobble up some of the really, really obvious ones, because we have some guys, whether it's LSU, UL, that have run track and played football. But the guys that do it, like Maurice Hampton, with football and something else, so incredibly unique. And while we're talking about Dion and Bo, probably should mention Kyler Murray, right? The reigning Heisman Trophy winner obviously has cut his teeth playing baseball as well and was a top 10 pick of the Oakland A's. So you're going to be hard-pressed to find someone who was that dominant at two major sports, dominant enough to where both could have paid him at least seven, if not eight figures. That is significant. We've got time for more. We don't want to hear from you. We need to. Hit us up, 706-0111. Another in the underrated category, arguably a top 3 to 5 athlete of the 20th century, Jim Brown. And for those that aren't schooled in this, you need to go hit the Google machine. Unless you're driving, then get home, get where you're going, then ping it. But the lacrosse player that was Jim Brown especially was legendary. And if you go look in Syracuse circles, you're going to find that very, very quickly. So dual sport can take on a lot of different forms. Some, again, that you won't quite expect. And I'm not sure that I'm going to allow anybody to call up and say somebody who also is a fisher or hunter. Not sure I'm going to classify those as a sport. You're not going to be able to give me Karl Malone as just a badass outdoorsman and also a basketball player. Because if so, well, if you've seen that video that's making the rounds from Randy Moss and Deion Sanders in the last week, both of those guys certainly would apply. That video also tremendous. Let's get out now to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. Cody, your favorite college and pro dual sport athletes ever. Go.
And I got college for sure, Ben. That's Chad Jones. He was a beast at, what, safety, LSU, and then he went through maybe low 90s on the mound. I'm pretty sure he was on that 09 championship team. I could be wrong, but I have a good scene of him from Omaha coming with that wicked slider and striking out a few guys and running off the mound. But Chad Jones, and he probably still would be in the league right now if he wouldn't have that bad injury in football.
Maybe either league, and I guess that proves the point. Thanks, Cody.
You got it.
He's spot on. Dreadlocks of Doom, 2009, LSU National Championship team. Maneri's only. I was sitting on Chad Jones. I wanted to give that to our listener base. That's a perfect example, though. And he didn't come in as a reliever, but wow, did they find the perfect niche for that cat. And I vividly remember the coma that he would put people in on the football field. I'm thinking in particular, 2009, LSU hosting Arkansas, Tigers wearing some kind of funky helmet uniform combination, and he damn near decapitated somebody inside Death Valley. Again, Google should back me up there. Let's get back to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, give us your pick. Well, that was compelling. CD, you lined it up for me, brother. Andrew, we got time for you. Anybody else, give us a holler. 706-0111. I'll give you a guy that's currently at LSU, Kerry Vincent Jr. Before him, Xavier Carter. I mean, world class speed. Trendon Holiday. So again, the guys that do track and something, usually and football, that seems to make a good bit of sense. Even Gerald Brazil, who's not only dual sport, he's like multilingual on both sides of the basin. He speaks football and track for UL and LSU. That may set a record. That might actually set a record. So again, the guys that are on the track, sometimes it makes a heck of a lot of sense. But what Maurice Hampton is set to do here, yeah, that's a lot more, I think, in the Chad Jones mold. I like some of these submissions so far, though. And again, it's going to get harder and harder for us to conjure up professional examples. There are a lot more on the college side of things. And I just think it's wonderful. Anytime you could dispel some of the myths of specialization, you have to specialize, you're not going to make it up the ladder. That, for me, is part of the good that people like Kyler Murray do and have done. I mean, Bo, Deion, some of these guys that have achieved at the highest level, some pretty good examples, and I hope we take some more before this thing is said and done. You could maybe even throw in a guy like Jimmy Graham, right? College basketball, pro football. I mean, a slew of tight ends for the last 10 or 15 years. Antonio Gates, pretty good examples, right? Guys that have done it at the highest level in a couple of different ways. All right, we got time. We'll take one more, but we got to hurry. Out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Chris, welcome to the program. What you got for us?
So, man, Jared Mitchell also on that baseball team, and I think he was a receiver as well.
He was absolutely a receiver. That's a great one. And if I'm not mistaken, a first-round pick of the Chicago White Sox?
I think so, 22nd overall, I think.
Your memory's better than mine. Chris, you're the man. Thank you.
Later.
Nailed that like a split hog. Ricky Bobby style right there. I think he was a first-round pick. Yes, Ben, 22nd overall. Okay, then. That's pretty precise. Jared Mitchell. Always, I remember being a little miffed that he didn't make it at the baseball side of things. What he was doing for LSU, again, that national championship team, it's funny what winning will do, not necessarily to exaggerate your skill set, but certainly puts everybody in a greater light. Some good calls there. Our thanks to Cody and Chris. Quick intermission, but don't fret. We'll come back to that subject after our next guest, Tim Linnefelt, going to set the show on fire. All about Florida State baseball next. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and you're listening to 103.7 The Game.
Stop yapping and get back to work.
Okay, everyone, let's get back.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 1037thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 1037 The Game.
Quick bit of LSU baseball news as we return and a great guest on deck. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back on 103.7 The Game. That news came down here within the last 6 minutes. Kay Doughty, the reigning Louisiana Gatorade Player of the Year, he has not yet been drafted, and he has declared he's coming to LSU. So there you have it, the first 2019 signee that's going to stay in the boat. More on that later. Let's get out now to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Joining us live from Tallahassee, Florida, it's Tim Linnefelt, senior writer for Seminoles.com. How are you, Tim?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
Everything here is rosy, right? Both LSU, Florida State, two of the 16 teams that are left in this whole thing. And while it may sound a bit on the cliche side, have you felt any of the rallying around Mike Martin? Have you felt kind of the win one for a Gipper mentality on this team?
Yeah, yes and no. You know, it's weird with a baseball season, right, as opposed to a football season, because football, I think, you know, there's so many fewer games. And baseball, I mean, there's 60 games, so, like, or more. And so I think that, you know, that might have been part of it throughout the season. But, you know, more than anything else, man, I mean, I think, you know, just from a competitive standpoint, I think some of those guys were, you know, a little bit embarrassed with the season that they had. I think they felt like they hadn't played up to their true potential, which I think is fair to say that they didn't. I think they were, you know, they felt like they were better than what they showed. And then factor in the Mike Martin situation and knowing that this is going to be his last year, you know, getting sent on the road to go play Georgia, I think was almost, in a weird way, kind of a perfect scenario for them, because I think they felt like they could play better than what they had shown. There wasn't going to be any pressure that they typically have playing at home. I mean, obviously, look, you know, Florida State baseball being what it is, you know, the fans here are aware of the history of this program, the fact they haven't won a national championship yet. And so, It would sort of become like a repeating thing every single year in the postseason, or, you know, even in the regular season. You know, Florida State could have a great regular season, and they would always sort of be like, well, you know, let's see what they do in the postseason. Whereas this time, they go on the road, the pressure's off, and you know, they were able to perform really, really well. So I'm curious to see how, if at all, that affects them moving forward. But, you know, it's hard to argue that Florida State's playing really well right now.
Tim, along those lines, we know what went right in Athens, just an offensive onslaught, but how did it happen and who stepped to the forefront for this team?
It really was kind of stunning, to be honest with you. I even, you know, a few days removed from it, I'm kind of stunned that it happened. I mean, a few obvious guys were involved, but some not so obvious ones as well. Or Drew Mendoza, the third baseman, he's probably the best pro prospect on the team, was their highest drafted player this week, and he did a lot of work as well. But probably the most compelling story, and then the one that I think most Florida State fans are going to be watching to see if it was a one-weekend wonder, if it's something sustainable, is that of a guy named Tim Decker. He's a senior walk-on, played 3 years on Florida State's club baseball team, and had didn't even try out for the first 3 years of his career because he heard that he didn't really pay that close attention to walk-on tryouts. He gets to his senior year, says, oh, what the heck, I'll give it a go. Says he was out there for 25 minutes, you know, doing some throws, doing some running the bases, and takes a little bit of BP. He says, you know, about a half an hour, saying, oh, there's no way they're taking this thing seriously. 2 days later, he gets a call that he's on the team. Even still, I mean, he's a walk-on, so he doesn't play all that much. He came into the Athens Regional, I think, with 32 plate appearances, had 8 hits, like 2 of them were doubles. That's about all it was. Well, he goes into the Athens Regional, hit 3-1, including 2 in the first game against FAU, and another one against Georgia in their first win over them. I mean, it's kind of unbelievable, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, a guy who, again, was on the club baseball team this time last year, and now is one of the key members of a team making a postseason run. It really is kind of something, and you know, sort of defies logic. And I think we're all kind of curious to see, you know, what I mean. I can't imagine he won't be in the lineup this weekend. I don't think Mike Martin would do that, but can he keep it up at anything close to that level? I think is a big question.
Just incredible. For our listeners, where might they see Tim Becker line up in the field?
In left field, typically.
Okay, just checking. Tim Linnefelt, our guest. You can read his work, and you should. Seminoles.com on Twitter, @Tim_Linnefelt. As far as maybe a projected starting rotation, we now know that it's going to be Saturday through Monday. What would your best dart in the dark look like there?
Well, I think they'll probably keep it the way they did in Athens. I think you'll see Drew Parrish, the lefty, start on Friday, followed by C.J. Van Der, actually on Saturday. The Friday starts, followed by C.J. Van Eyck and then Connor Grady. Parrish was thought to be their ace coming into the season, and when he's good, he's really good. He's kind of a crappy, you know, paint the corners type of lefty, but Van Eyck lately has probably been their best pitcher, and I think that, you know, the series has kind of tended to go which way he goes in that second game. And then Connor Grady's a guy who was probably their most reliable midweek guy. I think he was a pitcher that, you know, we really weren't quite sure who Florida State was going to throw in that third game against Georgia. It was between him and a guy named Shane Drohan. I was actually kind of surprised to see Grady, but it's kind of flipping a coin. I suspect that if it gets to a game 3 in Baton Rouge, it'll be Grady again.
So it sounds like the smart money is on Parrish, Van Eyck, and then Grady. Just looking through the wires, Tim, I saw where a right-handed pitcher, J.C. Flowers, was taken in the 4th round by the Pirates. How does he factor into the rotation or maybe the bullpen?
He's been their closer all year and has been really, really good at it, actually. And it was interesting about him. You know, he's probably been their – well, I guess, you know, he is your closer. He's been their best reliever, so much so that I think, you know, some folks have wondered if maybe he should pitch a little bit more. But he's been so valuable to them in center field. And with his bat, that I think they kind of like, you know, what he brings with what they're doing. And, you know, baseball coaches, man, I mean, they're always kind of reluctant. Like, if a guy is, if it's working for him to you know, to play 8 innings and then come on to close, you know, every couple games, something like that, they're not going to want to get away from that. And I think that's been the case with Mike Martin. But he has been their best reliever. And also, they're not afraid, you know, 6-out saves have been fairly commonplace with him. They're not afraid to go to him a little bit early if the situation calls for it. But you'll see J.C. Flowers in the closer role if that should arise.
Another few moments talking FSU baseball with Tim Linnefelt on 103.7 The Game. Our listeners will want to know, any change to the travel schedule now that we know it's Saturday through Monday for Florida State?
A little bit, yeah. Last week in Athens, they left Tallahassee on Wednesday afternoon. Got up to Athens that night and did their practice and media availabilities and all that stuff on Thursday for a noon Friday first pitch. This time around, I think it'll just be everything pushed back at the end of the team plans to leave on Thursday afternoon. I'm not sure the exact time, but I suspect it'll be kind of that same deal. Thursday departure, get into town, practice and press conferences and whatever else on Friday, and then a 3 o'clock first pitch on Saturday.
I know that Athens is a little bit closer, I would imagine, to Tallahassee than Baton Rouge, but what was the Noles' presence like, the fan base that traveled to Georgia?
Well, you know, it was really good, and I think that was one of the things, you know, man, it's easy to say after the fact, but I think, you know, sometimes some folks who follow Florida State closely, you know, you weren't quite ready to predict a Florida State win, but you saw some factors that could maybe play into Florida State's favor, and one of those was a potential fan presence. For one thing, Florida State has a really big baseball fan base, obviously. They've been successful for a very long time, and a lot of people are really into Florida State baseball. 2, you've got Athens, which is about a 5-hour drive from Tallahassee.
particularly for a Saturday game against Georgia. That's a Saturday night game against Georgia. There's plenty of opportunity. If somebody really wants to get up and go to that game, they can be there. Three, and then this won't factor in this week for Florida State, unfortunately. One of Florida State's largest alumni bases and alumni clubs is in Atlanta. They have a huge base of alums in Atlanta, so a pretty easy trip for them to come over as well. So, I mean, there were times particularly, I mean, those Georgia games weren't particularly close, you know. By the fifth or sixth inning, it was like Florida State home games. I do think Florida State will have a presence in Baton Rouge. I don't know if it'll be as strong as it was in Athens. In fact, I'm sure it won't be. I think it's a little bit further. Athens is like 5 hours. What's Baton Rouge? Probably like
I was going to say about eight, maybe.
Okay, yeah. I think New Orleans is six from here, and you get an hour going over, as much as that helps. So I don't know if it'll be as strong. But at the same time, being on the weekend, you know, maybe could help. The start times are a little more conducive. You know, it's not a super early start time. People can get over there. So, there's a super regional factor as well, knowing that if they win two games, that they get to go to Omaha. So I think there will be a Florida State presence. I mean, it is a fan base that likes to travel, but it's hard to imagine it being to the same degree that it was in Athens.
Tim, we'll get you out of here on this. I'm curious what the players, Coach Martin, have said about playing the program's first ever game in Alec Box. And then kind of along those lines, maybe what you're most excited about for this trip.
Well, unfortunately for the first part, I haven't heard anything from them yet. They last time they spoke publicly, they didn't know who they were going to be playing. Okay. That was after the game, so they didn't know. They'll have their media availability in Tallahassee tomorrow, so we'll be able to talk about it. But I'm personally excited about it, and I suspect they probably feel the same way. I mean, it's just, it's kind of funny, right? I mean, two kind of classic college baseball programs. Everybody knows, the success that LSU has had and the tradition there. And for one reason or another, they haven't really come to be associated with each other very much. You know, obviously they had the two games in Omaha a couple of years ago, and those were memorable. But they're kind of more recent. Like, you don't think about, like, you know, the old classic Florida State or LSU teams. Like, they didn't really seem to cross paths all that often. So, to me, like, it seems almost unfathomable that Florida State wouldn't have played baseball at LSU at some time. But here we are. It's one of those places, it kind of reminds me of Rosenblatt Stadium. I was fortunate enough to go there a few years ago. And I remember being there and thinking, you know, I'd seen this place on TV so many times. I kind of figured I would never actually get to be here. And that's kind of how I feel about baseball at LSU. I mean, if there's college baseball on TV, certainly like in the 90s and early 2000s, if there was college baseball on TV, it was probably at LSU. So, you know, you're familiar with that setting and that stadium, even if you've never been there. So I'm looking forward to actually seeing it in person for the first time.
Tim Linnefelt, Seminoles.com, breaking it down for us as we get ready for two powerhouses to collide. Tim, thanks for doing this. Have a great night.
You got it, guys. See ya.
There you go. And so you're looking at a pitching staff that has been pretty good. I could tell you that the lefty Parrish that's set to start, according to those projections on Saturday night, was an eighth-round pick earlier today of the Kansas City Royals. He told you Van Eyck, Grady, likely to go in games 2 and 3. And, yeah, the reliever, J.C. Flowers, lights out. But their best pro prospect, Drew Mendoza, as he mentioned, a third baseman, went 94th overall to the Washington Nationals, which means that, hey, he will be teammates if they stay in the same farm system as Todd Peterson, who was taken by the Nats in the seventh round. All right, we're going to switch it up. On the other side of this break, going to go to a little bit of basketball talk, a little bit on Anthony Davis, but also some on the NBA Finals. And speaking of that, tomorrow night we've got an NBA Finals watch party at Twin Peaks on Johnston. Your host will be, hey, that's me, Ben Love. This is a watch party for Game 3 of the NBA Finals between the Raptors and the Warriors as the scene shifts by the Bay. It's a Wednesday special that you're not going to want to miss at Twin Peaks. Special sirloin steak dinner for $11.99 with purchase of a drink. So come out and join me and 103.7 The Game for an NBA Finals watch party Wednesday, tomorrow night, starting at 7. Getting you ready for Game 3 of the Finals at Twin Peaks on Johnston with the eats, the drinks, and the scenic views. We'll be right back in with more B2BS. That's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Show.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at
103.7 The Game.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin won't play tomorrow, but he's ramping up his exercise routine, his workouts. And Clay is day-to-day, so he's questionable. And Loon is out for the series. So there's your medical update.
Steve Kerr dishing the goods there. Durant, Looney out for Game 3 tomorrow night. Klay Thompson day-to-day. We're going to get into the NBA, I promise. But the baseball news just keeps breaking, so we'll share that with you first. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Right back in on 103.7 The Game. Congratulations go out. The first Raging Cajun off the board in this 2019 MLB draft. Outfielder Todd Lott, 275th overall to my St. Louis Cardinals. Todd Lott, a ninth round selection of the Redbirds and bringing a lot of power to that organization. So really cool news there. Again, we'll try to do a full recap closer to 6 o'clock before B2BS is over today. At that point, maybe just maybe, round 10 will have come and gone and we'll have everything in stone. Still yet to be drafted from an LSU side, and this will upset a lot of people, but there's really nothing he could do about it. Antoine Duplantis doesn't hold any cards as a senior at this point, but his name hasn't come off the board yet. Neither has Cade Doughty's, but as we told you at the beginning of last segment, Doughty just tweeted out about 4:27 p.m. that he will be following last year's Louisiana Gatorade Player of the Year, Cade Beloso, and his older brother, Braden, to LSU. So Cade Doughty coming to LSU, competing for a starting job in day one. All right, I do want to take some calls on the NBA Finals. I've got something else on Anthony Davis that's pertinent. I'll share that with you, and we'll take your phone call. 706-0111. The credit here goes to Sham Sharania of The Athletic and Stadium TV. He tweeted earlier today, as teams continue placing calls on AD, Pels and Executive VP David Griffin have begun listening to teams. There you go. And those with the best chance of landing Anthony Davis, according to Shams, the Celtics, the Knicks, the Nets, the Lakers. Those four toward the top, but I'm certain that they're not alone. So what does this mean? I will double down on what I've been telling you. I think Anthony Davis will be dealt before the 20th. Why does that date matter to anyone? It's the 2019 NBA draft. So there you have it. It'll be 2 weeks from Thursday night. I think Anthony Davis is out of a Pels uniform by that point. Of course, as we know, he's been wearing that Looney Tunes, that's all folks, shirt since, I don't know, like a month and a half ago anyway. So he's probably been out of the uni for quite some time. But I think this is just another harbinger of what's to come. I look for Davis to be dealt sooner than later. While we have a few more minutes, I'll remind you about our sink or swim question of the day because we've got another good response on Twitter. But we asked you about 25, 30 minutes ago, give us your favorite college and pro dual sport athletes of all time. We have an LSU-based response here. This is pretty good. I'm going to give the credit to Carl Weathers. Okay, that can't be his real name. But here's what he submitted. Trendon, Jared Mitchell, and that 7-foot tuba player who Collis Temple got to play center. Ah, yes, I covered Andrew Del Piero during the famed Trent Johnson era. So I guess that counts as dual sport, right? Maybe just as much as Adam Sandler would for the Mud Dogs. If a water boy becomes a football player, is that dual sport? I don't know. A tuba player coming from the marching band, the golden band of Tigerland, and then playing center for the basketball team, maybe he's a little more equipped to fill this description. I've undersold the basketball segment for today's show. I know that. We've got too much else going on. So I'll try to get back to this a little more between 5:30 and 6 o'clock. But we do have the Warriors and the Raptors tomorrow night, first game that'll be played by the Bay. And as you watch that betting line in Vegas start to shift a little bit, hasn't moved much with that news that Steve Kerr told you in the lead of this segment. Durant, Looney out, Clay day to day. Well, yesterday, Golden State, they were 6-point favorites at home in game 3. Today, going off as 5-point favorites. So a lot of people that get rich on these lines, like the Warriors taking a 2-1 lead. We'll talk a little more about Golden State Toronto later in this program. See if we can't get a little more in depth with Anthony Davis, what today's quasi-news from Sham Sharania really means. And, well, anything else that tickles our fancy, we'll go down that road when it comes to the NBA. And yet I have saved room at the end of this hour, CD. Everybody knows we do one final word. Today, it's going to be more of a plea. I'll tell you what I mean.
What's up, Katie Anna? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Please! News has trickled out today that former Cy Young Award winner and Lifetime Houston Astro Dallas Keuchel, that there are two that lead for his services. The Braves and the Yankees. Please go to Atlanta. As an Astros observer, reporter, I'm not sure you should call me that, but as somebody who talks about the Astros, am I scared of Dallas Keuchel with the Yankees? I wouldn't put it that way. I would just prefer not to face that possibility. I'd prefer to not look at an ALCS matchup where Dallas Keuchel is like the fourth or fifth arm for the Yankees with a bleep load of motivation to stick it to Jeff Luhnow, A.J. Hinch, and the Astros. So am I scared? No. Would I prefer a different outcome than the Yankees? You bet your backside. So please, Kid Keuchel, why don't you take your talents to A-Town? That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. They are your final stop to flip your stomach and your tank as you head home on Maurice Avenue. We're halfway home ourselves. Coming right back, Shea Dixon in tow. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
So who do I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah!
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 2 underway. I'm Ben Love, and this is Bumper to Bumper Sports, joined, as always, by the famous Clint D on 1037 The Game. In a hot second, it's my new unit of measurement. Shea Dixon, go 24/7. He's going to give us the latest from LSU camp this past weekend. Walker Howard, STM rising sophomore with an Alabama football offer today. What does that mean for his recruitment? Plus, he'll share what the addition of Mo Hampton will mean from a football standpoint. And then we'll flip the script. It's all in on soon-to-be Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer Les Miles. So don't go anywhere. You're going to want to catch Shea Dixon momentarily. A quick story before we bring him on. And this is being told by a number of LSU baseball scribes. Paul Menary, the kids who have been drafted, I'm pretty sure even Antoine Duplantis, some that haven't, are set to meet with the media between 5 and 6. And as the reporters trickled into the room, they immediately got a story from Coach Menary. Christian Cairo, an MLB legacy, he was on campus today, actually with the team, looking at his prospective class schedule when he got called out of a team meeting. Again, class schedule in hand. Christian Cairo called out of a meeting earlier today. He was told that the Cleveland Indians snatched him up in the third round, the 130th overall pick. Cairo immediately came back into the room and, unfortunately, had to man up and let Paul Menary know that he wouldn't be staying in Baton Rouge. So just a brutal time of year. And it's not for Menary, it's for everybody. The timing of this, the absolute worst for the teams that are still in it to win it, playing in the final 16. But so far, Daniel Espino, Reese Hines, Jimmy Lewis, Christian Cairo, all drafted. Don't look for any of them to make it to campus for LSU. All right, plenty more on the Tigers, but more from the football side. Oh boy, it's that time.
Bring them out, bring them out, bring them out.
It's time for Shea Dixon of Go 247.
Let's do the damn thing. Shea, welcome back into the program. I know you do this every Tuesday out of the love of your heart. We appreciate you. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Always my favorite time of the week. And look, we've got some good stuff teed up for today, so I'm excited for this.
I am as well. And I know this, you're running on fumes, in part because I know you have exhaustive coverage always of LSU's camps. They have an elite camp later this week, but still, They just got done with their first of the summer. Give me two to three standouts from LSU's camp.
It was a good camp. Look, let's start there. I mean, they had a lot of kids in. And even in the Acadiana area, look, Caleb Holstein's younger brother, Eli Holstein, who will be a freshman next year, was there. He threw the ball well. Kayshawn Boutte out of Westgate was hanging out. Sage Ryan and golly, I must have seen 10 LCA kids there. Fitzgerald West, one of their younger defensive linemen. And I could probably jump around to a few more schools of guys that I thought sort of stood out, you know, coming out of the Acadian area, the Lafayette area. But, look, we'll circle back. We'll go to what LSU needs in this class and what they need in really every class, but certainly this class they want to score big on the defensive line. And for me, in state, it probably doesn't get any bigger than Jaquellen Roy and Jacobian Guillory. And they both had really good days, and they're different players. You know, Roy is playing at U High and has really changed his game in a year. I mean, he used to, you know, like most high school players, when you're that big as a 10th grader, you can just get by on size. And he did that, you know, for a team that was winning and going to state titles. And this past year to now, we've just seen him add moves. He knows, you know, he's been coached up well. He knows what to do with his hands, and he's only gotten bigger and stronger. So I think for me, you know, him and Kayshawn Boutte are sort of neck and neck if I'm, like, having to pick who is the best college football prospect in the state, and I think they both have a good case to make. And then with Guillory over at Ash, coming out of DJ Chark's old stomping grounds, and is a national power lifter. We've always won, I think, what they won as a school 2 years in a row, powerlifting title, and he won individual this year in the super heavyweight division. So he's just a beast at nose tackle. Not a lot of bad weight, just purely just a big, thick, strong kid. And he dominated, you know, on the interior. And if LSU can get them, they'll feel really good about things. And look, I'll toss you another on the other side of the ball for another position that people care about. It was probably the best that I had seen TJ Finley, you know, in the times I've gotten to watch him in person. And we know he's 6'6", 240. He's committed to LSU after playing and currently playing for Hank Tierney and that team at Ponchatoula. And they were a wing T team forever, and they've been sort of this shotgun throw it down the field last year. And we'll see what they have in store for him this year. But I think he's a guy who has a chance to up his stock a bit even further. You know, this summer with the opening, he'll compete in the Elite 11 and then into what, his final senior season, where hopefully they can have a big year, turn it around from a year ago, and then he can sort of enter LSU next spring as a guy that can get into the program, settle in behind, you know, Brennan and battle with Peter Parrish for, you know, future playing time.
A wealth of knowledge, and he's a versatile man. He's Shea Dixon, go247.com. A few more questions I have for him. I mentioned the versatility. On the other side of the break, he'll ask me questions on Les Miles. Yeah, you don't want to miss that. A few more on the recruiting front. Earlier today, Shea, Walker Howard out of St. Thomas More went to Bama, worked out, and got a Bama offer. This is a kid that will only be a sophomore this coming football season. He's currently the backup at St. Thomas More, although for good reason. Caleb Holstein, he's got offers aplenty from the Power 5 ranks. I guess if you could, evaluate where Walker Howard is and your feel for his recruitment.
Well, I mean, what he is a bloodline kid, right? I mean, we knew early on that he was going to be a big-time quarterback. LSU had been watching him, you know, when he was coming up through middle school. I mean, it was everybody in the area was talking about when he would step up and be that quarterback. And look, it's been sort of an embarrassment of riches, right? I mean, there was a time where, gosh, STM is rolling with Caleb Holstein and his younger brother Eli Holstein and Walker Howard, and all of those guys have big offers, but none as big as Walker Howard picking up Bama. I thought it was sort of an early game changer for his recruitment, if you will, because now all schools are going to take notice, and you really aren't jumping the gun at this point if a team like Alabama is putting an early offer out there to a guy who, you know, obviously Nick Saban probably knows. You know, it's just not an offer that they're throwing around. They tried, you know, to get in early and did. So I would expect you're about to witness some national recruiting on a quarterback level, really, you know, for the next, golly, 4 or 5 years coming through the Lafayette area.
Do you think in any way, shape, or form this affects LSU or puts the ball in its court, or it's way too early for that kind of talk?
Well, it's probably too early, premature for that, just given his age. You know, I mean, he's got time ahead of him to figure things out. But with LSU, look, let's see if he comes to camp. He went to Bama camp, worked out through, and got an offer. You know, if he, I'm curious to see if he comes to LSU camp later this month. My guess is he probably will. He'll throw there, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if he gets offered. So hopefully that's the case. Look, like I said, we got to look at Eli, one of the better young quarterbacks in the Lafayette area this past week at the skills camp. And if we could get a look at Walker Howard, I think the LSU staff would feel like they've got a good grip of kind of the guys that are coming up in the next, three or four years.
Shea, one more for me. And the whole name of the game in recruiting is turn prospects into players for your program. And after last night, first and second rounds of the MLB draft, we learned on Twitter that Maurice Hampton is going to come to campus. That's huge news for Paul Maneri and LSU baseball's outfield. I need your take. Give me his football impact. What does this mean for Ed Ogeron? And maybe compare the splash he can make right away from football to baseball.
I tweeted that it's a Chad Jones level addition. And, you know, I'll say this. He's an outfielder. He is going to start for LSU day one. He's freaky, athletic. And you want to say, okay, he was, you know, we remember, I guess, at the end of Chad being a closer and, you know, having those kind of moments up to the College World Series. And you can, maybe not, but you can easily sometimes forget how freaky he was as an athlete. I mean, he could play wherever you needed him to. He flew all over the baseball field. And in football, everybody's got a million Chad Jones memories, right? I mean, he laid wood. He could do stuff in the return game, anything you needed. He was just this big ball-hawking safety that could do it. And everybody around Baton Rouge knew him, right? Like, he grew up and everyone was waiting on, you know, for him to be a kitten to a tiger, if you will. So I think Maurice Hampton is that guy, except he didn't grow up in Baton Rouge, but he's been a fan of LSU. He committed to baseball early, committed to football early, and he put a number out there that he didn't waver on. And now that he's coming to campus, they're getting someone who, as I said, he'll be starting for the baseball team next year in the outfield. And I bet he's going to be playing on special teams in some capacity for the football team, just based off athleticism, I would guess. And we'll see what they're doing, you know, with the safeties and even the corners and having to play guys. Because, look, how quickly we figured out last year you can run through DBs. I mean, they were in the Fiesta Bowl with nobody, basically. They had a couple of guys, and everybody else was hurt or got left at home. So I see him on the field next year. And then down the line, you're looking at a guy who's going to start at safety and not just be good. He was Mr. Football in Tennessee last year. This is elite of a two-sport guy that's out there, you know, in terms of football and baseball.
Just getting started with our man Shea Dixon each and every Tuesday. The pleasure's on this side of the table. And when we come back, we're going to flip the table, flip the script. We're going all in on Les Miles, his big induction week into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. Shea, myself, we've got a few stories. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll tell them on the other side on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Let's go, people.
Come on, back to me.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Get in on the conversation.
Call on the game hotline.
706-0111.
706-0111.
We're going to do things different.
Can we be just like we were?
We're going to flip the script.
I flip the script.
It's time to flip the script with Shea Dixon on 103.7 The Game.
You know I'll flip.
From the current LSU football head coach, we're about to talk a lot about the last guy to occupy that position, wear those shoes. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game. Shea, I don't want to waste any time. I know you've got some Les Miles-based questions for me, and all of this, of course, comes on basically the eve of the hat going into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame in Natchitoches this weekend.
Yes. Well, look, we both, when we were running amok in Baton Rouge as young media members, we covered Les for a long time, football sort of year-round, and got to know him, and obviously, like everybody else, watched the games and tracked him in the media. We were the media at the time, or still are, but he was here. We were his media at the time. So we need to dig back. We need some, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of this going on this week as he gets inducted, but some old Les stories. And I want you to just pick out your couple favorite ones that everybody knows about, you know, the mainstream grass-eating stories, and give us a couple others. Throw us some bones of maybe some lesser heralded or at least lesser talked about Les moments that that you can recall or that have at least stuck with you, grilled into your brain forever.
I have never in my life been around a more loyal, and then kind of the flip side of that, but it was tied in, stubborn man. But the loyalty was impossible to miss. And the story that comes to mind for me along those lines, Scott Rabelais, you'll recall, wrote a column in The Advocate, and it used the word flop in referring to Russell Shepard leading into R. Shep's senior day. And that did not go well. And the way Les responded to that, you could see the fierce loyalty to his guy in both of his eyes, and he started to just lose it. And again, he was a loyal man. He also was a very prideful man, and you saw the pride come out when Jeff Duncan, soon to be formerly, of the Times-Picayune, asked about the hammer and the nail with Florida. So I remember vividly both of those moments, being in the bowels of Tiger Stadium, post-game pressers, and Les just showing you the type of fire that you would expect from an offensive lineman that's about to go through like a freaking Oklahoma drill. But then there was always the part of Les where he liked, at least publicly, he liked to leave people laughing, if you will. He liked to leave people kind of feeling that they just heard a good ball of yarn unwound a little bit. And so even on like the Russell Shepard moment, you'll recall that he tied that in, Shay, to the whole. So when you see these guys, you go up to them and you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl. And then the whole room just erupts. And that, almost to a T, was Les. And the other one that's almost impossible for me to forget, and you call this what you want, right? I think it's more bravado than anything else. But 2010, I've told this story on the show before, when LSU goes to Florida, beats Florida, Jarrett Lee to Terrence Tolliver at the end of the game in the Swamp, and Les goes in and says they didn't like us very much at 5-0. Let's see how they feel about us at 6-0. I mean, the man, when things were going right, I mean, the chest just stuck out, brother. I mean, there was bravado. He was bulletproof. And it could be very entertaining to be around. And speaking of entertainment, there are the moments that everybody remembers. When he talked about the throng of media reporters, except he said thong, phenomenal. Columbus Day, anybody that's likely to build a ship or board a ship, phenomenal. I mean, the guy had just so many quotable moments. But you asked me for some less heralded ones, and I could share some of those as well. I remember a Monday weekly press luncheon, and Les started asking us because he couldn't always tell by sound where the question was coming from. Shay, I know you know what I'm talking about. When you took the mic, he didn't always see it passed around, and if he didn't recognize your voice, he couldn't tell who you were. You remember how he sometimes asked us to identify ourselves and what we were wearing?
Show yourself.
Yeah, I mean, kind of. And so I remember one time he said, yeah, give me a description of where you are. And so, you know, people started doing like middle aisle, right aisle. And at one point, I took the mic and I said, Les, right here, middle aisle, man in a good-looking striped shirt. And without missing a beat, dude looks at me and says, boy, you're taking an awful lot of liberties there. And so he just, I mean, almost off the cuff, he was hilarious. And you could see how he got along, I mean, famously, with people and with recruits, with parents. There were some other moments as well. I saw some of the fiery parts of Les behind closed doors, no question about it. You and I were at least at one press conference, an end-of-the-year wrap-up, where we got to put tape recorders on the middle and ask about the next season. There were several moments where it was, all right, boys, put the tape recorders away, and Les shot you BS-free for a little while. So there were a lot of moments with Les that I'll remember pretty fondly. The other one that kind of showed the type of competitor he was, when LSU lost to Cam Newton and Auburn in 2010, yeah, it was that same 2010 season, that's the most deflated I've ever seen him following a game before. And it took his wife, Kathy, some time to console him. And these were the moments between the end of the game and having to talk to the press. And so, look, don't get me wrong, he wasn't weeping, but the guy was almost dead weight standing, and his wife had to kind of bring him back to life so he can come talk to us for a little while. So there's a lot that I'll remember about Les, and there was certainly a lot more good than bad, but certainly toward the end, it was time to go. I think we all understand that, but there's a lot of good memories about the man, no question.
Well, there you go. And everybody, you know, I don't think anyone was upset, right? Like he, and maybe people were upset with how it was handled, you know, year to year of firing him, not firing him. We kept him, and then you immediately fire him, you know, a few games in when the wheels are starting to come off. But so when was Les at his best? And I don't mean most endearing in terms of his personality, but and it somewhat ties in, but when was he the most dominant as a football coach? What stretch of time was that?
There's not even a question in my mind. Labor Day weekend of 2011 until January 8th of 2012. That's the best LSU football team that has ever existed. Sorry to 58. Sorry to 03. Not really sorry to 07. I think that was the worst of the bunch. And it feels contrary saying it, but what Les and that 11 team accomplished running off a 13-0 record with the competition, playing so many big dogs away from Tiger Stadium, that was even more impressive for me than the 2007 two-loss national title team. So I will give you from the Oregon game in Jerry World until the night before LSU took one on the chin to Alabama. So maybe right about the time that Jordan Jefferson, whoever else, were out exploring Harris, somewhere in that range.
There you go. Okay, so that, and then before, I mean, and I guess the lead up to that, right? I would think that people consider that January, you know, what, 2012, that you referenced to be sort of, and they were good, what, the next year, but sort of the beginning of what would become the end, right?
It was, and let's tell it like it is. There was offensive rigidity and stubbornness, but, I mean, the next 2 years of Mettenberger was fairly prolific. What has to be said is that 2013, skill-wise, the defense wasn't up to snuff, and you started to see Chavis, who was the national freaking coordinator of the year in 2011, falter, right? He started to follow a little bit of the old Gary Croton post-2007 pattern, so... Yeah, it started to go downhill at January 9, 2012. Not all of it was on Les, but as the head coach, as the head whistle, you bear the brunt.
There you go. It's good to see him. I don't think you would disagree. He certainly belongs in the Louisiana Hall of Fame.
A man from Ohio that played at Michigan and stole the hearts of a lot of people down on the bayou. And that's paraphrasing roughly what Scooter Hobbs wrote and kind of bringing him into the hall. But it's odd because he didn't have any connections really to this area before taking the job, but he left an absolutely indelible mark. So an incredibly well-deserved honor, and anybody that read me at Tiger Rag Magazine from 2009 to 2012 knows that I did not mind roasting the man when it applied. But when you could take a step or 15 back and look at the panorama, he brought a lot of good to the program. He stepped into shoes that weren't quite as big as what Skip Berman left for Paul Maneri, but they were awfully damn big, what Nick Saban left behind. So certainly a very well-deserved honor for Les Miles. I'm happy for the man and his family.
Oh, and the one rhetoric died right eventually of he's still winning with all Saban's players, right?
It certainly died. Yep, that one died big time. Boy, if they could have found a way to get along with Jimbo Fisher just a little bit longer, that was one of the best things LSU had going from Saban to Miles. But you know, if ifs and buts were, okay, I'm not going to finish that saying, but you get what I'm saying here.
I do know exactly what you're saying. Well, look, I congrats to Les. We covered him for a long time. So happy for him, happy for Miss Kathy, their family. But I'll wrap it up with this, Benjamin. What is he going to do this year? This man's coaching football right now. Is he turning, not, what is turning Kansas around? Is he, what's happening? What does his immediate future hold as a, you know, a guy who's sort of finding, is sort of, what you would think would be a swan song. This would sort of be it.
Success at Kansas is them competing with basically every team that's not Oklahoma and Texas, and it not being a shock. I'll hold those two out right now. They seem to be a cut above, even ahead of Oklahoma State, West Virginia. If they can get to the point where year in, year out, they're competing with their peers, whether they're winning all those games and it's not a shock to people, that'll be success. And I think that'll take a little time.
Maybe they'll give it to him. Maybe they'll give it. He's got an old buddy as an AD there. Maybe he gives him a little time.
There you go. Shea, I appreciate you hopping on to do this. Enjoy the rest of your evening, big dog.
Absolutely. You guys too.
There you go. Scorching hot, per the usual. Kind of like the weather. We know the hot summer sun is in high gear. As we head to a break, a reminder, the best way to cool off is with a trip to Blue Bayou Dixie Landing in Baton Rouge. And Acadiana Sports Station wants to send you there with a free family four-pack of tickets. But you got to text H2O to 68683. Do it right now. That's H2O to 68683 for your chance to win a family four-pack of tickets to Blue Bayou Dixie Landing in Baton Rouge. We'll be right back. We'll take some of your less stories. We'll get your reaction to what Shay and I just said, and we'll throw a little bit of shade. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be right back in on 103.7 The Game.
Winners eat nachos at a ball game and snag a foul ball barehanded without getting a drop of cheese on their shirt. Winners ride home with Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Good afternoon. Just want to remind everybody that it's Columbus Day, that all those of you that know Italians and like Italians are the people that might venture onto a ship and travel to explore and find new lands. This is your day. So it's not St. Paddy's Day. That's a different day entirely.
Just a poet. Les Miles there bringing us back in. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're live on 103.7 The Game. We said the phone line was open, 706-0111. After all, we are men of our words. Let's get out now to the Artco Equipment Hotline. Ron, thank you for waiting through the break. You want to talk Les Miles?
Yes, sir. I got two of them for you. To kind of piggyback off of what you were saying before the break, that Auburn game when we lost to Auburn, I remember the next. I think we played Alabama that next week, and I remember looking at the inside LSU show after the game with Gordon Russell and Les Miles was appalled that Alabama was picked to come into Tiger Stadium and beat us, and that just kind of showed his fire. Right, I watched that, and I'm like, he was appalled. He couldn't believe that they were picking LSU. I mean, Alabama to come to Baton Rouge and beat LSU.
I remember that, Ron. That was sacrilege to him, and that was the last time LSU has beaten Bama at home. The D'Angelo Peterson end around play. So that was one hell of a game. And you'll recall that Bama game that we're referencing. That's the one where our guy chewed some grass.
Okay. Yeah, and I got one more. I remember the Tennessee game. That was kind of early in his tender. And I forgot the interview after halftime, and it almost slipped out. I don't remember if it slipped out or not. And they asked him pretty much what LSU was going to do the second half, and we're going to play our aces off. And I'm wondering if anybody remember that. Kind of shows his passion, you know.
He had a ton of it, and he had a way of even kind of covering up some of his foibles and making them very, very funny. Ron, thanks for going down memory lane with us.
All right. Thanks. All right.
You got it. Hey, let's take some more. 706-0111. I've got some other news that I'll share with you as we throw shade. And this is relative to football in the state of Louisiana. But when it comes to football played at LSU, certainly Les Miles will belong toward the tip top of coaches to ever do it for the Old War School. I like some of these memories. Again, I shared some of mine. And that was back in the day when I was a man who did wear good looking striped shirts. These days, I don't play for the Yankees. Not a lot of pinstripes going on. But I remember that comment vividly. The guy did and still does just kind of have a wit about him. And if you take this out of context, it's on you, not me. I'm absolving myself from any wrongdoing here. So how about that for a precursor? We used to say sometimes that the man came off as dumb like a fox. And that's exactly the phrase that we would use in some of the media circles. Because, again, even when it felt like he was out of control, didn't know what he was saying, had aired, he found a way to cover it up. And at the end, people are usually talking about some of the funny stuff. People usually found a way to forgive some of those foibles. Now, when it came to LSU's offense, not quite so much. All right, we got time between now and 6. We can take more of your calls. But while we've got a break, I think you'll enjoy this too. How about your daily reminder? It's a PSA locally that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. And know that you can trust their professional installers inside your home. And what a thing of beauty that is in 2019. Collectively, the team at Patio Center, they're ready to up your patio game before this football season. But at this point, you better hurry. Go to the website. Get ideas. Let them help you with ideas. PatioCenter.com. The kings of customization. It's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center.
Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
Clint had suggestions about a Louisville pitcher. I kind of kicked around the idea of Duke Johnson showing up to Browns OTAs despite demanding a trade, and yet both of them are getting violently kicked to the curb. Because when you mess with the port city, oh, that's got to make throwing shade. The SEC, in announcing future bowl tie-ins earlier today, declared that they have severed ties with the Independence Bowl in Shreveport. Womp, womp. The Pac-12 is now tied in with said bowl game, which forces me to ask the question, do you remember the days of the Poulon Weed Eater Independence Bowl? I sure shootin' do. Some of the greatest event sponsorship in the history of football down south, and maybe the close cousin of events sponsored by Golden Flake Chips and Snacks. By the way, you go to Hoover, you cover SEC Media Days, you're over there at the SEC Baseball Tournament, Golden Flake Chips are still just crushing the game outside of Birmingham. And events like that always needed to be shown on Jefferson Pilot Sports. And so on a day like this, where the Independence Bowl and its proud history have been taken away from the SEC, now going to those hippies from the left coast in the Pac-12, I can only think of our brothers, Kent Lowe at LSU, one of the Port City's finest in Hunt Palmer. I don't even want to talk to him Thursday at 4:30. He's going to be despondent, like a family member was killed. No more SEC in the Independence Bowl. I hope that they will cope.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
CD, I've got a mental image of Hunt Palmer going full out Terrell Owens instead of,
that's my quarterback, man.
That's my bowl game.
That's my bowl game, man. That's my bowl game.
It's ridiculous.
I have watched so many Independence Bowls over the years. I always love Hunt telling stories about the ones played in snow.
Yes.
When he was growing up. Of course, I mean, local legend Kevin Falk had himself one hell of an Independence Bowl. LSU squared off with Notre Dame in that game. If memory serves, LSU squared off against Nick Saban while he was still at Michigan State in that game. So for the SEC, it might just mean more. But unfortunately for this state, if you count North Louisiana as part of this state, it just means more dollars than the Port City. Hunt might literally drive a stake through my chest on Thursday. We'll see how that part goes for me. Final break of the show. Would love your feedback. No more Poulon Wood Eater. Weed Eater, that's what it is. The Independence Bowl, at least for the SEC. We could talk bowl tie-ins. We can go in on Les Miles. And we can also get back to the NBA. Anthony Davis even further out onto the plank, at least as far as trade offers being received by the front office of the Pels. We'll be right back in. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're live on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
He's to the 10, the 5, touchdown!
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Well, I had never thought of it that way.
But feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Back in one final time. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Getting ready to shut it down, at least for our program, on 103.7 The Game. When we're through, Tiger Rag Radio in its entirety. Jeff Palermo, they've got some great guests coming aboard that show. Stay tuned 6 to 8 p.m., and then we'll get to the Astros at 8:10. That's first pitch from Seattle. CD, speaking of those Astros, it was announced earlier this afternoon, Corbin Martin was optioned down to AAA. He didn't make it out of the third inning last night, despite the Astros winning 4-2 in Seattle. He started with a flourish against the Rangers about a month ago, and since then it's been mediocre to bad to very short. So let's take the sum total of today's news that could affect Astros pitching. Corbin Martin, yep, optioned down. Dallas Keuchel, looks like the Braves and the Yanks are front runners for his services, so not likely to stay in Houston. Can we feel all right about this rotation? I know it's one of the best teams in baseball. They're white hot right now. Yep. You feeling okay with what's going on? Because here's the other caveat that I'll add in before I get your opinion. Forrest Whitley has not been having a good go this year in AAA. So I'm not suggesting to you they're anywhere close to elevating the fireballer in AAA. So your take on this rotation, especially after JV.
Oh, it's very tough sledding. I mean, you got to think about, you brought up Justin Verlander being your big cat, your A number one. I think when you look also at Gerrit Cole can have the tendency to be a great pitcher, have great overall performances, but we've seen it all the time. We saw it back when he was the Pittsburgh Pirates. He was allowing a lot of home runs with a lot of consistency, and we're starting to see that a little bit more this year.
His 19 is not currently his 18, to your point.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. It's definitely the strong case that his 19 isn't his 18, but he's still able to get things done.
Strikeouts are still there.
Yeah, exactly. He's getting like a 12 strikeout game, but he's still allowing like a home run almost every game. I'm sure the average doesn't show he's allowing one home run a game, but you're starting to see it pop up a lot more, and that's not exactly a good thing. And without Corbin Martin, it's going to be tough sledding for this team to be able to have a consistent like five-game rotation, which I'm sure A.J. Hinch and everybody else wants to have.
For the duration of the regular season, yes. Once you get into the playoffs, not quite as important. High leverage situations, like for example, I would greatly prefer Colin McHugh and his services as a high leverage bullpen guy come playoffs. And I'm certain that's what's going to happen. But I'll take you to one guy who is giving me some faith in life after Verlander and then Cole. I got to see him against the Red Sox a couple of weeks ago after doing B2BS at Minute Maid. Wade Miley has been more than just serviceable, my friend. In fact, he's been awfully good. And so when you combine that, in my opinion, with the best back end in baseball, with Ryan Pressly, who picked up a rare save last night, and especially with Roberto Asuna.
Framber Valdez looked good, too, last night.
Framber. And that's kind of had to be the case. They've had to chase Corbin Martin with Framber Valdez, so I'm not sure they want to keep going that route. Haven't even thrown in Will Harris yet, who's not quite at an all-star level, but damn good.
Yep.
I love everything about this pitching staff, maybe with the exception of 3-5, and then really in the playoffs, 3-4.
Okay, I like that a lot. It's like I feel like you need to be able to have that fifth guy during the regular season, and it's hard to kind of pick who that fifth guy would be right here, right now, especially with Corbin Martin getting sent back down.
I would suggest what? Miley, Peacock, McHugh.
That would be ideal, I think.
Right. And
I'm sure, man, that's not what they want.
A team with that rotation that's healthy at the plate and in the field, they're going to win the AL West, and they're going to avoid, I would imagine, any type of play-in game just with their record.
And the way they're rolling right now.
Call me a cynic. I'm just not buying into the Twins maintaining this pace. The Twins will be making the playoffs. The Rays, they're not a lock. I want to see what Boston does, but the Rays look awfully good in that type of role as well. But I like New York and Houston to have the two best records in the AL by the time we get to the finish line. And, you know, it's interesting. Under the dome yesterday, you paid a lot of tribute and love to those Twinkies. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
They knocked the hell out of the baseball, man. They hit it so
hard.
Exactly. They've got a bomb squad there. If they keep getting what they currently are out of Jake Odorizzi, out of Martin Perez and some of their starting pitchers, hey, good on them. They will be there. I'm also not willing to bet on that.
I think that's the biggest thing. I feel like the Twinkies are that team that can wind up sneaking up behind you, and the fact they've got the ability to hit the long ball with a lot of consistency.
Well, they're currently not sneaking up on anybody.
No. I'm saying like whenever you get into postseason play, because I'm sure they wind up dropping down a little bit, but I still feel like they can wind up being a team to usurp the throne that it feels like the Houston Astros want to take over. But you're bringing up the fact like you want to have a healthy offense. I think we're seeing now a lot of the youth is coming in here and really taking care of business. Jack Mayfield, Garrett Stubbs, who his brother just got drafted by the Astros, and CJ Stubbs, just recently he's a pitcher out of Cal. I think this is going to be very interesting to see what happens, especially with Alvarez. Apparently, rumors are he could wind up called up.
Jordan Alvarez.
Called up on Friday, possibly.
No kidding.
Yeah, I was seeing something this morning about it.
I don't think they need him, but it would be nice to see him get his feet wet. And
I think that's what it's all about.
And I'll give you an example. I can't remember his first name, but you know that your boy is a fantasy baseball addict. I mean, just a straight-up derelict. And the Brewers have a great young second baseman. Last name, H-I-U-R-A, Hura, I don't know.
Yeah.
But they brought him up, and he was really good, for about 2 or 3 weeks. And they just optioned him down to AAA because Travis Shaw was back and available. So sometimes, even when somebody like Hura for the Brewers, or potentially Jordan Alvarez, even if they come up and have success, doesn't mean that they're going to stay there. Once the Astros get their full complement back, I'm not sure that they need him just yet. But I don't mind watching him get his feet wet one bit.
Oh, it's going to be fun to see what he does, take a step in. And you're talking about fantasy football derelicts. I don't know if you saw the news pop up in the last, like, 20 minutes or so.
I've been doing a radio show.
I'm a McCutcheon. He's out for the year. ACL injury.
That affects fantasy football?
Fantasy baseball.
I won't take him this year.
That's some fantasy baseball.
I'm messing with you. And I watched the little rundown pickle he got in between first and second base. Torqued the knee a little bit. Yep. He's on Twitter asking people to pray for him. So that dream team type of lineup that Philly has built, yeah, that would be a blow. I don't know about a crushing blow.
Yeah.
But they're right toward the tip top of the NL East along with Atlanta. Best record in baseball right now, 42-19. That'll be the Los Angeles Dodgers. But, I mean, fractions behind are the Twins at 40-18. And the Astros are right there in that conversation. So here we go. We promised to talk some NBA. Promised to talk a little round ball in this final segment. But you know what? I'll take 8 to 10 damn strong minutes of Houston Astros and Major League Baseball talk anytime. Especially when we get to dive into my fantasy knowledge. It is extensive. It does not lead to winning teams, but it is extensive. That much I can promise you. So I'm looking forward to how this thing kind of rolls into the All-Star break and then afterward. What are they going to do with some of the guys that have been on the shelf? Can they find a different masseuse for Carlos Correa? A lot of important questions for the Astros heading down the home stretch of this season. But right now, just keep doing what you're doing. I told you, we're going to carry him tonight. First pitch is 8:10 Central Time. And, of course, that one will be live from, I think it's still Safeco, whatever Seattle's calling their ballpark these days. But it'll be Wade Miley, the guy I was talking about, against Andrew Moore, who is making his MLB debut tonight. So the Astros, 41-20. They've won 4 in a row, 8 of 10. And they're looking for Miley to get them out to a big start, see if they can't keep the streak going. Big-time lineup. Seriously, on a Tuesday. This was fun. Tim Linnefelt, very knowledgeable. Covers all things Florida State for Seminoles.com. We got our full FSU baseball breakdown, plus the updated travel schedule. Now that this has been announced as a Saturday through Monday affair at the box, our thanks to Tim Linnefelt from the 4 o'clock hour. And I'll tell you, for my money, probably a top 5 or 6 Flip the Script with Shea Dixon today. We do one every single week. There's a large body of work that was solid. Telling Les Miles stories always gets people a little amped up. So great stuff. Again, Shea Dixon, go247.com. You missed either or both of those interviews. I'm going to encourage you to go to our website or the free mobile app. Just click or tap on demand. You can listen to Tim Linnefelt and Shea Dixon. One final note, and a bit of a preview for tomorrow, since I've already mentioned the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. Don't forget the inductions are this Saturday. You can watch the ceremony on CST. Les Miles, of course, going in to talk on Miles, Roger Cador, famous Southern baseball coach, and Peyton Manning. We're going to have a living legend on ourselves, the Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, one of my favorites on this program, and that's no lie, Lynn Rollins, tomorrow at 4:30. So plug it in and make sure you're around. Thanks to all of our guests today. YP, you people in listener land, strong day, calling in, responding on social media. We appreciate your ears and your voices. For the famous Clint D., my name is Ben Love. This has been Bumper to Bumper Sports. First, Tiger Ag Radio, then Astros Baseball, all coming at you on 103.7 The Game.
Live from the 237.